thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Time is 8:40. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. Luba Mayegiso, how are you?
Very well, Howard. And you guys, just amused at your discussion there today.
Yeah, so David Abramson no longer in studio, but I think these are important discussions, and certainly we're seeing, and I don't know how it is in Cape Town, but I believe that our youth here are under tremendous, tremendous stress, and I believe that unless we start trying to understand where this is coming from and how we can possibly change it and deal with it, we're going to have a bigger problem.
You know, my observation, Howard, is that society places this pressure on the kids. You and I were at school. I heard the discussion earlier. You know, a couple of kids would get A's and distinctions, but that was kind of the exception. And we always knew that these were the guys who, in many cases, had no social life. They would sit, they would study, they wouldn't play sport, at least in my school. And maths and science, they were brilliant. But whenever they had to apply themselves to anything else, like English literature, they fared like everybody else. But what I've observed, and I must admit it's probably biased towards girls' schools because that's where I've observed my kids mostly, the pressure the kids have is ridiculous and is placed very often by parents. I would look at lunch boxes. You know, everybody at a particular private school had this big box, lunch box that you could sit on, and then inside there were Woolies goodies. You know, kids weren't making lunch boxes, taking, you know, Sami's bread and putting whatever else on. They were buying stuff from Woolworths. My son, who was 6, came back and he asked me about seaweed snacks. And I said, what on earth are you talking about? Because some kids were taking this to school. You know, you could take whatever, peanut butter, jam. Suddenly school say no gluten, no peanut butter. I go to a birthday party. I think it was at Kerem, and somebody says, oh, we don't want our kids to have cake. So let's agree we have, you know, if there are 20 kids in class, there are 20 birthdays, my kids can't have 20 slices of cake. I don't need cake. So, can we do something else? Now, you know, I understand the health challenges, but do we have to take it that far? Anorexia at a girls' school, suddenly, I mean, I'd always heard about it in magazines, I'd never seen it, but suddenly it was a big issue. But again, the mums were pushing the kids about their figures, what they're to look like. So I do believe in some ways that parents are more involved. You know, a kid gets glasses and we get a WhatsApp message from other parents saying, can your daughters be more supportive of little so-and-so who's getting glasses today?
No.
I mean, when I got glasses,
no.
I was on the phone. So I think the parents,
but
I'm not saying kids
this is
are struggling.
Absolutely.
We add to it.
Yeah, so everything I think it's absolutely appalling because I think everything is clearly being taken to the level of such, involvement, anxiety and focus. As you say, when I remember getting glasses I remember getting glasses. I certainly don't remember anything about it. And certainly my parents wouldn't have known or bothered if somebody called me four eyes.
Exactly. You had to sort it out yourself. And that's why I'm saying, I mean, tonight I'm told that the subject choices, and I was saying to my daughter, you know, at school I was a boarder, you kind of chose your subjects and you either made a hash of it or you got it right, but it was your choice. Now we're going to a second round of meeting to have somebody discuss subject choices. And I mean, there's so many choices that they have. And I'm saying, guys, life was simple. You had 6 subjects. Now my daughter tells me she's got 8, 10. And I'm saying, but how did you get there? And I think, in some ways, we do over-nanny the kids and get far too involved in too many things. I mean, when they went to grade, when they went to senior school, again, there was a meeting. Your daughter's not going to senior school. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, with us, it was just another year. You ended the year in December, January, woke up, you went to high school. End of story. So I think somehow we put so much around them. Yes, there are pressures, but I think we do make it worse. We exaggerate it and we worry about every single thing. You know, they drop a grade here. The amount of extra activities. I mean, my 8-year-old, I was taking them to Kumon Mats yesterday and I got there and I saw them do the stuff and I was asking myself, but why is he here? Because all the exercises I gave him, he did in record time. And then I'm saying to my wife, but why are we here again? So there's extra maths, there's extra English, there's extra Afrikaans and there's so much, and it's costing a fortune for the parents because half of these activities aren't even in school. So I always ask the question and I say, you know, what has changed Are there additional pressures? Yes. But are we coping with them, or are we also too involved in the kids' lives that we bring additional pressure? How they dress, what's in their lunchboxes, what their grades look like. And I just think we, in some ways, we're over-parenting, and the schools are somehow just doing too much. Then, you know, they could certainly just scale back and put less pressure on the kids. But certainly you go to certain schools, there's an image to be maintained, and there's a track record to be maintained in academic results. So the kids are driven relentlessly, you know, to perform and to get certain grades.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because in some ways I'm thinking, as you're speaking, that we are so involved and so much trying to grapple for control of our children's lives and academic paths and careers. But in some ways, because of social media and because of the situation, we've actually almost lost control. Because they are able on their phones and through their friends to be able to access so much more information, and we don't have control of that at all.
Yes.
So it's a very, very interesting balance. As we lose control, so we grapple for more control.
Absolutely. And I mean, they've got this term that they use to parents who are control freaks, and I always try and avoid it and say to myself, I mustn't be that. But I do see it around me, and I just find that parents are incredibly involved. I mean, even whether it's even outside school, even if you're taking the dating scene. I mean, I remember my son going on a date with this young lady, and he apparently was late for this date, and it was the first time they were going to be meeting at a restaurant. The father called me and he said, "Where's your son?" I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm here at this restaurant, and you know, my daughter had an appointment with your son at 3 p.m. and he's not there." And I had delayed ordering the Uber because he hadn't been open with me to tell me where he was going. And I had to say to this father, "But you know, why are you involved? Why are you calling me? If my son's got a date with your daughter, why must I account for my son where he is?" And he says, "Yeah, you know, I want my daughter to have a normal life, but I want her to be around men who are responsible." I mean, goodness me, they were in high school. And I was like, you need to speak with him. If you think he's not punctual, deal that with him. But I can't be getting a phone call and be dragged over the coals about my son arriving 5 minutes late for a date. It's that kind of, I think, invasive control that I think is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and of course, then everything that does get posted to social media takes on a different level completely when it comes to anxiety. And I've seen that with friends and their children. Somebody posts something to Instagram, and there's this massive blow up because how could they and how should they? And parents are being called into meetings and apologizing to other people. It's just completely out of control. And I don't know where it starts, and I certainly don't have the answer as to how we can sort of turn down the temperature, because it is definitely too high. And if parents are behaving in that way and at that level of anxiety and involvement and hysteria, then what can we expect? What can we absolutely expect from our children? You know, for them, this is everything. Social media and how they appear and what's been said about them is their world. So it is really, I think we are doing them a tremendous disservice by behaving the way we behave as parents.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Linda was telling me that you wanted to chat about a throwback and kind of look at what we...
Well, because it's Throwback Thursday, yeah, I was just thinking, and Lindy and I were chatting about it, is when we were younger, pre the 1994 post-apartheid South Africa, we had a vision of this country. And certainly some of us that were, for example, at law school, we studied constitutional law, we were more active in this because we were trying to imagine what a country would look like when there wasn't it wasn't a racially based system. And then, of course, now we're in 2019, and we look back, and I was curious as to how you thought South Africa should have been prior to 94, and now in 2019, looking back and thinking, what have we done well and what haven't we?
You know, the more I thought about that topic, I had to say to myself, in fairness, we probably were quite naive, not in a bad way. I mean, if you are 10, 15, even 20. Mm. What you imagine the country to be is always going to be different to reality. And part of that, I must say, is that if I take myself, let's say, as a young black South African growing up in South Africa, so many of us had never left the country. I mean, you didn't even have a passport to leave the country anyway. You had a homeland travel document. So what was your ideal scenario based on? Nothing other than what you kind of clashed on what you saw maybe on TV, read in the paper. It's not as if, I would say, 9/10 of the South Africans had traveled outside the country, had looked at, let's say, visited America, the UK, wherever else, and said, this is what a society looks like that we kind of ascribe for, and this is where I want us to get to. So many of those experiences were probably shaped by media, in terms of what we saw in media. And then, of course, the rhetoric politically. I mean, you know, you always had the freedom charter and slogan. So you spoke of freedom, but what did freedom mean? And I don't think for the average South African, you actually broke down that freedom to what it meant. I mean, certainly at varsity when we were doing, you know, we were singing about the unbanning of the ANC. We're singing about Nelson Mandela being released and everybody else on Robben Island being released. So it was almost very simplistic. Release Nelson Mandela, unban, you know, the organizations, the struggle organizations. And we kind of looked forward and said, we're hoping that life will be normal. You can live where you want to. You can work where you want to be. So the detail wasn't there. It was almost kind of just a general picture of what you wanted. I know for me, part of the struggle was an added complication that sitting in a private school, as you know, in primary school, being the only black kid, and my brother in high mm-hmm. school, to some extent, that fooled me into thinking, okay, this is South Africa and it works well, because to a large extent, the other kids accepted you. And if there were one or two who were racist, they did their best to kind of hide it and suppress it. So nobody would call you the K word in your face unless you were playing another school. So life seemed almost normal. So to some degree, I kind of said, okay, this is it. So it's not a big deal. It's fairly complex. It's fairly easy, because as children, you're able to do away with a lot of the emotional and traumatic stuff, because you'll play together, you'll eat together, you'll do things together, and kids are far more accepting. And I think for me, that may have given me a false illusion that it's far simpler to achieve than people make it out to be, because I got to school and there was no resistance and life was fine. But outside school, I would get glimpses of the challenges we'd face. So when I left high school and got to university, I think that was my big wake-up call, that life wasn't what I thought. When I got to, you know, Rhodes University, students didn't sit like we did back in school, where you just sat with your friends. You know, the black students sat together, the white kids sat together. People didn't mix. Mm. And then when people played sport, I was told, no, but you can't play rugby. We don't play rugby. We play soccer. And you can't go and play rugby with the white kids. They've got their own kind of things. So I think looking forward, again, was a case of, can we just do these things together? You know, why can't we just all play sport together? Why can't we live together? Now, when you look at it now, there are far more structural things and yet subtle things. Yes, I can live where I want, certainly, you know, but there's still that racism that still exists in people, that challenges that we never foresaw, you know, struggles within the ANC, dealing with unemployment. I mean, I'm looking at the figures today, they've gone very high. And we almost, that detail we never worried about, because you just assume that if everybody lived in a free society where we could vote, then somehow all these problems would disappear and all be taken care of. And we didn't imagine that we'd be grappling with land restitution, reserve bank issues, state capture, fractured parties, and all of those issues. And I think we had rosy spectacles in terms of what we expected. Have we done well as a country? I think we have. I think in the negativity, we like to, as South Africans, retreat and think that things are far a lot worse than they were. So I always look back and I say, if you look at the then and now, a huge amount has changed. An incredible amount has changed. It's unbelievable that we didn't fight and we have the things that I can live where I want to. I can go where I want to. So we must never diminish what we've achieved. Yes, but there are some nuts and bolts that are still missing. But overall, I think we've probably achieved a lot more than I thought we could. I mean, I remember being at university. You were almost fearing a civil war. You know, when I stopped and I was driving to Joburg and I stopped in Venterstad or some other town in the Free State, and you walked down the street and you saw three white Afrikaans boys walking towards you, you could almost see the menace in their eyes, and they would kind of, you know, fill the pavement and walk towards you, and you'd be obliged to walk onto the road because you knew there was a confrontation brewing. We didn't get to that. And we still haven't got to those issues. So hence I say, in many ways, we've achieved so much more than we thought, but we didn't imagine the detail. So I think a lot of us just had this beautiful canvas and we had broad strokes about what the country should be. It wasn't detailed. And I think there is no way we could actually imagine the detail because I was not an economist. I was not a lawyer. I was still a student. And so there were limitations to what I could foresee.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I do tend to agree with that. And I think that when you're fighting for the basic rights and you're fighting for first line human rights, there's no question that is the case, that you aren't looking at the nuance and the detail. And we do have to look back and say, well, look, oh, those things have absolutely been achieved. And the fact is that, yes, there's some things that haven't been, and it's not pretty in some ways, but at least we have achieved many of those things, even though we accept that there's still a great journey ahead. It is 8:56, Luba Maikis. Unfortunately, I do have to leave it there. Thank you, as always, for your thoughts and for your insight. Let's take our final look at what's happening.